I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science in a nice, sort of friendly way, as we invite a new expert every week to help us answer science's most interesting questions. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Mr. Michael Brooks.
Is that Mr. as in you're giving yourself a promotion like a surgeon, or Mr. as in
you're
just stripping
yourself back? Oh, no, that
could
be that, couldn't it? Yeah. I'm so big, I don't need to be doctor, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's impressive at a hospital, isn't it?
Yeah, always.
You've got real problems if a mister comes in.
Yeah, yeah. Here comes Mr. Andrews to tell you you're going to die.
Oh, no. I'm not Mr. Andrews. He comes in with his sign.
Could I not have a doctor?
Is there an equivalent? Well, I suppose it's just professor, isn't it?
You get professor and then you're sort of done, aren't you, really?
Is there anything above professor? No.
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 No, it's good enough. I mean, I'm one level off the top, effectively.
You feel like more than that, though, don't you?
Feels like a long way.
As in, you feel further away. what are we talking about today?
So you know how I've now got an electric car?
Of course you have.
Of course I have.
You're so
feeling
woke.
Very smug. Yeah. And but the thing is, I was feeling smug until I started to read about, like, you know, the minerals that go into making them and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, if you want everyone to have an electric car, then you need to make the batteries from stuff that people are now talking about mining off the ocean floor.
Well, that instinctively doesn't feel good to me.
So, you know, exactly. So, and it's sort of like, the more you read about that, you think, oh, I'm not sure everyone should have an electric car, actually. If we haven't got the resources to actually build them without strip mining the ocean bed, that's sort of a problem. So here's my idea. Rather than destroy the ocean floor, mm-hmm. where there's obviously biodiversity, mm-hmm. We maybe should leave it. Mm-hmm. Why not get the materials from somewhere where there's no biodiversity, as in space?
Oh, space again. Just an excuse for you to talk about space again.
We did
rockets and we did, you know, warp drives.
Well, that's just one episode. There's more to space than that, surely. Okay. But yeah, we're going to dive into space mining.
So is there a chance that you might trade your electric car back in for the old MX-5?
Still got the MX-5.
Have you still got it? That's good. Just when you really want to flex.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just when I'm not feeling man enough. So space mining is... I mean, what's your gut reaction to that?
So my gut reaction is fine, but the obstacles are huge because, I guess, I'm just thinking about how you transport the stuff and the energy required to do that. So how I get up there to do the mining and then bring it back feels tricky.
Yeah, tricky is a good word. Yeah. I mean, it's tricky. It is definitely tricky. We're going to get into all of that. But at the same time, let's not mine the ocean floor then.
Yeah, point taken. Air, sunlight, soil, and water. Mammals, birds, fish, and plants. Oil, coal, natural gas, metals, stone, even sand. All of these natural resources are right here on planet Earth. The things we take for granted. Yet as time ticks on and we use up more and more of our resources, it's time to think about what else is out there. Could the answer be in space? Space is a largely untapped resource with huge potential. One asteroid, snappily named 16 Psyche, is believed to have enough gold and other precious metals to be valued at $700 quintillion. That's enough to give humans on Earth a tidy fortune of $100 million each. NASA is pursuing the possibility of harvesting resources from space to both help us here on Earth and on our missions out into the stars. Could this be the answer to our depleting supply here on Earth? We don't know. And that's why this week we're asking, could we get resources from space?
Let me tell you about our expert this week. She's Dr. Adriana Moraes. She has the most insane CV ever, right? So sure. She's currently a director at the Foundation for Space Development Africa, which is developing Africa's first mission to the moon, the Africa 2 Moon Project. She is a member of the South African...
Didn't spend long thinking about that name, did they? What were we thinking? Africa to the moon, is it?
Yeah. She's a member of the South African Government Ministerial Task Team on the Fourth Industrial Revolution. She's on the faculty at Singularity University. She's the founder of Proudly Human, which is a project that prepares for life on the moon, Mars and beyond, as well as providing solutions for those living in harsh conditions on Earth. And she is currently developing a blockchain-based economic system for off-world environments, working towards a second PhD. And get this, her first was in quantum physics.
Oh, I wonder why he likes her so much. Well, you know, in fairness, that is an impressive CV, but you've got to bear in mind that I presented the Hollyoaks Music Show, which was, so it was on the set of Hollyoaks, but then bands would come in and play iconic venues in the Hollyoaks Village. And I presented that.
So who's winning, really?
So, yeah, you can keep your doctorate and your second doctorate, thank you. When she gets her second PhD, can she be doctor?
I guess so, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's a big flex.
Yeah, I mean, she's not going to give that up as easily as I gave up doctor today.
No, but then she probably isn't constantly going on about it.
Anyway, so obviously, I know what you're thinking. She's so good. This episode is going to be out of this world.
Just thinking about whether I want to do this podcast anymore. I'll do this episode and I'll see how I feel. So space mining is interesting because we do know that extracting resources on Earth is expensive. But equally, as I was saying,
tricky.
Getting to space is way more expensive. And much harder.
Yeah.
We talked about this in our rockets episode. So what is the motivation behind space mining?
All right.
Is it just...
Can you guess?
Money.
Yeah, that would be it.
Money, and we're running out of shit.
Yeah. So there's money to be made, basically, because everyone's saying, oh, we need more of this stuff. People are saying, well, you know, it's there in space. If you pay me enough, I'll set up a program to go and get it. I mean, we're now in a privatized space race, basically.
Yeah.
As you know, we've got all these corporations that are actually sort of working towards life in space, you know, talking about colonization of the moon and Mars. So, you know, there's lots of kind of reasons to do this, I guess, as a step towards other things as well. But first, let's hear Dr. Adriana's answer to your question.
So at some point, we are going to run out, not of these metals and minerals in general, but run out of regions on the surface of Earth where we can easily extract such things. So in fact, looking to the asteroid belt, where we do find cores of planetesimals and many other pieces of rock that come from smashed up planets or other bodies in space, we can actually extract the kinds of minerals and metals that may lie deep below a planet's surface, just in a rock that may be a few meters or a few kilometers wide orbiting around the sun. So that's some indication of why we would want to, rather than dig kilometers below the surface of Earth, perhaps start to look for these same kinds of minerals and metals that we need in our technologies beyond Earth. And of course, the environmental implications of digging up the surface of a planet that's teeming with life, you know, by this current era, there are people and creatures living in all the regions that we would like to dig up to get resources. So there's a good ethical motivation also, I believe, for looking to the asteroid belt, where we may find the same kinds of resources, even more easy to extract than on a planet.
Yeah, so I get it. The Earth's mining resources are running out and will run out sooner or later. And we're already sort of fucking over the environment and plants and animals that live where we want to mine. So we should look for alternatives.
And people sort of, you know, wring their hands and say, oh, we've already ruined the Earth and we can't ruin space as well. But space is kind of a ruin, to be honest. I mean, these
are it's a shithole. Yeah.
I mean,
there's nothing there.
These asteroids are not, like, pretty or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just potentially useful resources. And basically down here, you know, we've got, you know, so for instance, platinum is a good example. Mm-hmm. So platinum, you know, hugely obviously valuable metal down here, used in catalysts for all kinds of sort of industrial processes. And it's a really important catalyst in hydrogen fuel cells. So if we convert all the cars, or, you know, a lot of cars into hydrogen burning things with fuel cells in them, mm-hmm. That have platinum in them, you know, so 500 million vehicles, basically we run out of platinum in 15 years, like literally run out of platinum.
Right.
So you know, it's not really a good option.
No.
Without some other source of it. So, and you know, and I mean, as well, I mean, I quite like the idea of mining asteroids because you can find a lot out about, you know, the history of the solar system. You know, so you can do science. So NASA is already doing science by looking at asteroids. So we could just do more and get some stuff from them as well at the same time.
So is there platinum floating about then?
There's a lot of platinum floating about.
Okay.
There's a lot of, you know, things that are really rare on Earth and valuable are just floating about in these asteroids because, you know, obviously, as Adriana says, they're sort of deep down in the Earth's crust. But these things have just broken up planets or broken up planets that didn't quite form. So they're there sort of on the surface of these asteroids.
So it's just exposed.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And so, you know, so it'll also teach us something about how planets form as well, hopefully, if we have a look at them before we start strip mining them.
Well, would there be a sort of weird economic effect, which is if you went and mined a shit ton of platinum from an asteroid, say, and then bought it back, suddenly the value of platinum decreased exponentially?
Yeah.
Presumably.
We'll definitely get to that. Yeah. I mean, that is a sort of, you know, a given that if you bring a massive amount of platinum back down to Earth, obviously
supply,
you've destroyed it. But if you bring it back down and keep it to yourself.
And I feel like the people bringing it down probably
Do you think
would.
They might? Yeah. But, I mean, you know, before we get to that horrible situation.
What's in that lockup, John, that you brought back down from space? Nothing.
I mean, it is sort of, it's really hard to do. So space mining. So, you know, we can talk about people sort of making themselves rich or destroying the world economy. But actually, you know, to get there to that situation is going to require quite a lot of work. So yeah, if you want to mine an asteroid, fair play to you in some ways, because there's a lot of work to overcome. You know, when we talked about the tech billionaires and ended up basically saying, well, fair play to them because actually they've solved a big problem and they probably deserve to get a lot of money for solving that problem.
Hmm.
If you are the kind of person who can solve how to mine asteroids profitably, then, you know, fair play to you, really. Because these things are spinning, right? I mean, not only are they out there in space and in the asteroid belt or sometimes coming close to Earth, but not that close.
Not that close.
And you've got to get to them and then you've got to somehow attach yourself to
land
them.
Land on them.
They've got very little gravity, so you've got to grapple onto them and hold on while you either drill down using presumably solar-powered machinery. So it's got to be incredibly efficient solar-powered machinery because you're not going to put fuel up there. You know, that's going to be too heavy, too difficult. So you've got to maybe even de-spin it. So you use thrusters to kind of stop it spinning so you can, you know, you don't get thrown off. Or the stuff doesn't all just fly off as soon as you have mined it. So there's a lot to do, basically. And then you've got to get it back either to low Earth orbit for processing or back all the way to Earth. So, it's sort of quite a tough job to mine an asteroid, and you know, you probably need a fleet of vehicles to take the stuff as well.
Wildly expensive.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of, NASA's put it at like $2.6 billion to sort of mine a kind of small scale asteroid.
That sounds cheap to me.
Do you think so?
I think that sounds cheap.
Yeah, I mean, this was a kind of little one, so this is like a 7 meter wide asteroid, so not huge. Difficult landing, probably.
Horrible landing. 7 meters.
Yeah. And so it's about 500 tons of asteroid and 2.6 billion. So presumably that'll scale up. And obviously, if you develop this technology, then you get better at it and it gets cheaper the more you do, obviously. But, you know, it's sort of quite a lot. But at the same time, you know, if you set up a rare earth mine on Earth, like so for, for rare elements, you know, these valuable elements, that's going to cost you $1 billion, right?
Yeah.
So actually, 2.6 billion doesn't sound like ridiculous to me in some ways.
But then is there, sorry, I'll keep coming back to this. Is there not the issue that I spend all this money to then bring all this stuff back that then I immediately devalue because suddenly I've got shitloads of it?
Yeah, but if you hold on to it, as I said, you're not devaluing it.
Yeah.
And you get, apparently the companies involved are talking about getting 50 billion worth of platinum, say, out of a sort of 100-foot asteroid, right?
Okay.
So 50 billion, and obviously if you flood the market with platinum, that's a problem. But, you know, you're spending quite a lot. So they reckon $35,000 per kilogram to bring it back to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that's, you know, quite a lot of money.
And how much would it be worth?
Once you got it back there?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's...
Hopefully more than that.
Well, I mean, it depends if you keep it to yourself and don't tell the platinum market that you're just about to...
the information is probably going to get out there.
Yeah, it might do. It might do. But I mean, they're sort of trying to factor in all this elasticity of price and all this stuff to make it viable, to make it worthwhile. And obviously, you know, that means you, if you're bringing it back from space, you're probably going to decrease production on Earth. And I mean, it's hard to find the economic, I mean, it's basically hard to get a bank loan to get this done, right?
Yeah.
Because it's hard to prove that you can really make money and significant, serious amounts of money worth making. But at the same time, you know, you might improve mining efficiency once you start sort of getting on with this. You know,
you'd assume you would, yeah.
And things like the Falcon, like reusable rockets, bring down the cost of this kind of thing as well. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine that if Elon Musk was willing to pay $44 billion for Twitter, was it, or something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is small change in some ways. And if he decided, I want to create a fleet of space rockets and fleet vehicles and trucks that carry stuff back
to Earth, get mining.
He could probably do it.
Yeah.
If he wanted to do it. So so it's possible to kind of do this thing. And the big problem is that, like, you know, asteroids are quite inaccessible. There's not that many of them out there.
Yeah, I think that's maybe the thing that we're slightly overlooking at the moment is, just aside from the cost, it's just fiddly.
Fiddly.
Really.
I mean, at first it was tricky. Now it's fiddly.
I think it's tricky. I think it's fiddly.
A bank manager. He's asking for a loan. Well, it looks tricky. It's fiddly. I mean, it's, so basically, what people have realized now is that the moon is sort of easier than 90% of the near-Earth asteroids.
Yeah,
and so
it's
they're
close.
Saying...
ish and big.
Asteroids were a good idea, but a bit tricky and fiddly.
Mm.
What about the moon? Could we not mine that?
Yeah, answer staring you in the face.
It really is. Yeah.
Get busy.
Yeah.
Is it just cheese?
Here's what Adriana said to that question, which I didn't ask her, obviously.
If we're thinking about extracting physical material resources, the moon is then the closest body that is currently under discussion. And the kind of resources that people are thinking about extracting from the moon primarily center around a sustainable human presence on the surface of the moon. So for that, we need power and rocket fuel. The type of rocket fuel that is hydrogen burned and oxygen can be created from water, H2O. Both of those elements are present in this very valuable and precious molecule that we'd probably take for granted here on Earth on a planet covered 71% by water. But the primary goal or the discussions around our return to the moon in the next few years are centering around the extraction of H2O ice on the surface of the moon to use for fuel, but also, of course, for water, for whether that's for crewed missions or for agriculture, perhaps for the crewed missions. And of course, the oxygen that can also be split from the H2O water molecule by electrolysis or some other process. So in fact, this single molecule H2O is the basis for both power systems, fuel in terms of fuel, and also for water for plants and humans, and also for oxygen that humans require.
Actually, listening to Dr. Adriana, soon to be, talking there, her idea of moon mining is actually more about sort of space exploration.
Yeah, so she's not, I mean, when she's talking there, she's not initially talking about, like, you know, strip mining it for valuable materials as such.
No.
So, but initially you set it up as a base, don't you? So the important thing, if you want to do all this sort of space exploration, go and mine asteroids, you need a lunar base. It makes a lot more sense to launch that and maybe process stuff on the moon. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, you know, you need to kind of basically have rocket fuel from the moon.
Yeah.
So the initial thing is like, well, there's loads of water on the moon, as it turns out. Let's get hold of that, make some rocket fuel, and away we go. So it's a kind of step on the way, I guess.
Yeah, because the gravity is lower.
Yeah,
on the moon. That's the main advantage, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's just easier to get off.
But there's a lot of interesting stuff going on with ideas of mining the lunar surface as well.
Okay, before we jump into the possibilities of lunar mining, I'm going to take a quick break. But when we're back, we'll get stuck into the future of space mining while Apple is messing around with a robot called Daisy, as well as, of course, answering our question, could we get resources from space?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And we're back. So go on then. What about the lunar surface? What's going on with the research there?
So there's, again, private companies are basically going to the moon this year, probably. I mean, they're on schedule at the moment. So autumn launch, late 2022, they're saying. There's this company called iSpace that's built a program for a Japanese company. So the Hakuto program basically is going to land on the moon and kind of have a look and do some sampling and see what it finds. They're also, I think, on the same mission, and it's all going up on a Falcon rocket. Mm-hmm. So again, that's SpaceX, another private company is involved. There's a lunar explorer from the UAE is going up as well. So their first moon mission. And they're all basically looking to see, you know, what you can extract. I mean, you can imagine that UAE is like, oh, yeah, we're quite good.
We've
at extraction.
A bit of form here, actually. Let's have a little look.
So what they're looking for is primarily water. So there's they think there's around, there's tens of billions of metric tons of water in the form of permafrost and ice, mm-hmm, at the moon's poles. So somebody wants to get a piece of that.
Mm-hmm. Did you say that the company is called iSpace?
Yeah.
Are Apple not going schizo about that?
They probably tried, haven't they? But I guess, you know, some lawyers said, you know what, you don't do space exploration yet, Apple. So you don't own everything that begins with an I.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I'm no lawyer. So, but they can't own everything that begins with an I, can they?
I guess not. But as soon as you hear iSpace, you're like, oh, Apple are doing it. No. Hooky Apple.
So obviously, you know, as we said, you split water into hydrogen and oxygen. You've basically got yourself a rocket fuel, mm-hmm, and the combustion.
And we're doing that by electrolysis, are we?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm not sure where the power comes from for that. Solar
that
power?
I guess
you can solar it.
I guess. That's sort of my question with a lot of this is, where is that? It feels like the energetic demands are massive for all of this.
Yeah.
Maybe it's sort of capital outlay. And once you're up and running, once it's okay.
Yeah, I'm sure that's how it is. I mean, you know, you could look at any space project and say, oh, this is, you know, energy intensive or capital intensive or whatever. But it's still worth doing to some people, at least. You know, Elon Musk is saying it's worth doing. So let's put the capital in. So you know, you're mining lunar ice. People have said as well that we should mine helium-3 from the surface of the moon, because there's loads of that there. And that's a fuel for fusion. Whether or not you can build a fusion reactor that really, you know, uses it properly is another question altogether, because fusion, as we know, is always 40 years away. Mm-hmm. But people are saying, you know, that there's kind of, and obviously there's likely to be sort of minerals, maybe things that we haven't, you know, don't realize are up there as well. So there's sort of various possibilities once we get there. And we kind of won't know until we try, effectively, with all this. And you can... I mean, there's a Silicon Valley startup, right, Opus 12, which is basically doing electrolysis of carbon dioxide. And it's sort of got this system going. So you can basically make methane, again, another fuel, and ethylene and other, basically other carbon fuels. Mm. And that's obviously, you know, what SpaceX uses for its Raptor, for instance, is liquid methane. So you've got the potential to sort of, and there's loads of carbon dioxide around and on the moon. So you can basically put a pump up there that electrolyzes the carbon dioxide, make your, you know, rocket fuel, and away you go. So it's sort of doable. You know, the logistics are difficult.
The electrolysis of carbon dioxide, how am I ending up with methane?
Well, because you must have to combine it, obviously, with the hydrogen that you're getting from the water ice as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again.
It's just chemistry, isn't it? It's,
presumably... I can't be the only person who's a bit skeptical about this stuff.
No, far from it. And a lot of people are saying, yeah, this isn't really going to happen. It's sort of easy to talk about it, but the practicalities really tie you down. And so there's a guy at Birkbeck College in London called Ian Crawford, who's spoken quite a lot about, he's basically called bullshit on a lot of this stuff, mm-hmm, and says it's just not going to work out economically. And it's sort of just so hard to construct something on the moon that's like a renewable power plant. Mm. It's not going to happen. We don't need helium-3 yet, you know. And also, you know, the ethics of strip mining the moon are questionable in some respects, in that, you know, there's legal things in force that seem to suggest that the moon belongs to everybody and it's not just first come, first serve. So how
do you deal with that though? I mean, presumably countries are trying to put dibs on bits of it.
Well, I think nobody's successfully doing that. And there was a time when Obama signed a thing saying, you know, it was okay for American companies to go and mine in space and stuff. So I don't think there's any kind of really strong legal situation.
Have I misremembered this, or did this feels like the kind of thing that might happen? Did the Chinese not land something on the dark side of the moon, and no one's quite sure what they're up to?
Yeah, yeah,
I love that. Because what I'm imagining is that they've just been mining it. We just can't see it. And then someone's going to fly past and be like, oh, Jesus Christ, this is decimated.
Half the moon's gone.
Half the moon's gone.
They've literally just like turned it into a hemisphere. Sorry, guys.
We did just do that.
We'd see the stuff coming back to Earth, wouldn't we? Also, what would that do to the orbit of the moon? I mean, that would send it haywire, presumably.
I feel like it would be a problem. Yeah,
I think we'd notice.
I think so.
I mean, I like the idea, though.
Yeah. Be a hell of a surprise.
I mean, if you made it a lot lighter, then it would just fly off, wouldn't it? Isn't that what the physics works?
Yeah. Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, people would... Oh, well, in fairness, though, when you're talking about these mining operations, you're not taking that much out. So here's something else. Again, coming back to the economics of it, these are largely private endeavors, which mean if they do work, then a load of really, really, really rich people will get even richer. Am I right?
Yes, you're right. And that's actually one of the concerns that Adriana raised.
There are certain asteroids in the asteroid belt, as you've said, between Mars and Jupiter, where we see bodies that could be estimated at trillions of dollars in terms of what we estimate their content to be. And if it's a several hundred ton mass of mostly platinum, what actually would happen if we brought this rock back to Earth? And now things get more speculative. So if platinum was no longer a rare metal because we brought back several hundred tons of it from some asteroid in the belt, what would happen to the price of platinum? So it's correct in thinking that we run the risk of the rich profiting even further from space resources and getting richer, basically, and inequality that we've seen increase, especially in the last 2 years in the economic lockdowns associated with the pandemic. We've seen inequality increase, we've seen poverty increase, and this seems to be the direction in which our current economic system is taking us, that increasingly wealth and resources are owned by a few.
Yeah, so the space mining market could be worth, you know, trillions and trillions of dollars. And because there's no real... It's like the Wild West out there.
Yeah, exactly.
It could just make a handful of people sort of phenomenally rich. And is there gold in any of them?
Yeah.
So doesn't gold sort of underpin the world's financial markets?
I mean,
bought back a shit ton of gold. What does
that do? It screws everything, right?
Screws everything, yeah. I think.
Like, if you bring back a shit ton of platinum, it sort of screws everything. Unless you just keep it to yourself and sort of, you know, use it as currency, effectively. Mm. So you're spending it. But I feel like that's unlikely.
It does feel unlikely.
But, I mean, the thing is that, you know, if they flood the markets with it, I mean, I don't care about the price of platinum coming down.
No.
You know, that doesn't bother me as such. And if that means that what you've got is cheap catalysts for a fuel cell economy or a new way of producing energy, then that's a great thing.
Yeah, because they're still valuable as a utility.
Yeah. So you take it as a kind of a startup for the energy revolution, and, you know, maybe you just wipe off the value of platinum and say, I've brought all this back for the good of humanity. I mean, you could not imagine that happening, can you, really? But, you know, once I've offset that against tax, obviously, because that's a huge business expense. But, you know, there are ways in which you could do that. I mean, it's a staggering amount. So, like, this one thing, Psyche, 16 Psyche, this asteroid.
Yeah.
It's like quadrillions, which is like one followed by 15 zeros worth of dollars. Lot, yeah. Many, many quadrillions, much bigger than the global economy. So you dump that back on Earth and you've basically obliterated the global economy and the way everything works in civilization, pretty much.
Time for a reset, anyone?
Maybe that's the most radical thing. But, it's a long way away. We can't get to it, really. So NASA are going to send a probe to it to have a look, but, for science, not to bring any of it back. Well, that's what they're telling us. So they'll arrive at the asteroid in 2026. It's launching in August, actually. 1st of August is the launch for that. Coming back 26, and it'll tell us stuff about, it arrives at the asteroid in 2026.
Yeah.
And they'll just do data analysis and send back the data. And they sort of tell us about the kind of formation of the early universe. I mean, that they're seeing it as a science mission. But what it shows is you can get there and you can look at this stuff, and it's got this ridiculous amount of stuff on it. So even if you took a small part of it back, you'd probably still be able to kind of make a profit on the mission, I'd have thought. But,
So it feels that all of this is slightly moot unless we have the technology necessary to actually do mining in space, to actually mine asteroids. Like, do we think we can do it?
Well, I mean, we're making some progress on that front. Okay. I mean, it's not like the warp drives. where it sounds great, but we're not really going to do it. So, we've got all these sort of sample return missions that are happening. And we've done that, Hayabusa 2 sort of sampled an asteroid for it surveyed it first and then took samples. And we've got various sort of missions that have sampled asteroids, brought stuff back to Earth. So, and there's more on the way. China's doing one. And China's doing a lunar sample mission as well. Because, we haven't brought much stuff back from the moon, actually. Mm. And not really sort of investigated that. So the back half of the moon, they've obviously brought that back in secret, and then they're just going to do the front half. Guys, this is all we're interested in.
We just brought this tiny piece back.
So it's all sort of, it's doable. We've landed stuff on, you remember we landed on Rosetta, I think it was.
Yeah.
And Rosetta, the Philae lander, landed on an asteroid, crashed and failed a little bit, but we still got some stuff, got some science out of it, so we can do that thing.
Crashed and failed is not great though, if I've just spent $2.6 billion.
That was a government science thing, whereas the private private ones will work. So it's all sort of doable and sort of just needs upscaling, I would say. Mm. And we've got some other technologies as well. So there's an organization called TransAstra, which is actually funded by NASA, but it's a sort of startup that's looking into getting water out of the moon's surface with like literally a pump, effectively. So it's like a mining for mining the ice and bringing water out of the surface. So we've got sort of some technologies being developed for this future of their stuff, being industrial stuff going on the moon. And, to some degree in asteroids, but asteroids are more difficult. So it's definitely sort of happening.
You mentioned that we obviously need to upscale everything. How far off are we from upscaling in a meaningful way?
From what Dr. Adriana said to me, quite a long way. So here's what she said.
We're still a long way away from that. Look at manufacturing facilities here on Earth. Look at nuclear power station facilities here on Earth. A lot of the facilities that produce, whether it's power or electronics, are still vast kind of enterprises with crews of thousands, if not more, people working at the facilities to produce these very specialized sort of components that arguably we would need when we're in space. Computer microchips, for example, this is something we would need to be able to produce in space eventually. Yeah, let's not go into detail on Earth about supply chain interruptions that have happened because of the economic lockdowns, partially during the pandemic and the resulting shortage of computer microchips, because Taiwan is currently the major producer of these kind of components. So even on Earth, we haven't quite got it right in terms of being able to mass produce the most essential pieces of technology that we need.
So, I've talked a good game up to this point, and now it's like she's sort of saying we're still not very good at it on Earth, and obviously space is hard, so it is going to be harder. But I'm just worried that we're strip mining the seabed soon, and I'd like to avoid that. So I'd rather the sort of technological innovation went into strip mining the moon than the seabed, if I'm honest. And then maybe that's controversial, but I really don't like the idea of us just like...
I think if it's a straight choice between, strip mining the ocean floor or space mining, then I go space mining because I don't give a shit about space. But it's not a straight choice between that because we definitely can strip mine the ocean floor.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm not so sure currently that we can mine in space.
So in some ways, what we need to do is reduce the resources that we require.
Yeah, we need to get better at what we're doing on Earth, don't we?
Yeah, like recycling, reusability, circular economy.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Using like stuff from... I mean, I've got like phones sitting in my drawers, like the office drawer, just old phones, which I haven't got around to recycling. I know. It's a huge flex, isn't it?
Just old burner phones. Yeah. Affair phones, drugs phones.
But they contain these minerals like that we need. And I'm just sitting on them and not doing anything about them. So that they need to be like properly recycled. And we need to be much better at that.
Copper. Are we doing that?
Some, you can send them away for recycling and for the minerals to be extracted.
Are we any good at that, I suppose, is my question.
So we're getting better at that. And Apple has this amazing robot, actually, that uses AI to strip the resources, the minerals, the metals out of old phones.
Mm.
And it can do 10 phones in 3 minutes. It's like...
That's good.
Yeah, I mean. I think it's good. You think how hard it is to get into those things and then, so it can just identify what it needs to pull out.
I chuck it a phone and it just like yanks it open and gets the good stuff out.
Basically, it's called Daisy.
Yeah, it's cute.
It is cute and it seems to work. By the way, I mean, call back to our AI episode where
AI getting better than
expert
us.
Said, no, it's fine. It's like, if they can do things like that, I'm worried about that. Yeah. Anyway, so we're losing our age,
wasn't it?
Yeah, Junaid Mabeen. I mean, he was the optimist, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not optimists here.
No, I don't think so. So, obviously we need to like reuse, recycle, do all that kind of stuff. And we need to please not strip the ocean bed. But I think, why not look at space mining? I like the idea of some tech billionaire saying, do you know what I'm going to do? We're not going to, we're not going to talk about a Mars colony yet. We're not going to talk about a moon colony. What we're going to do is just talk about and develop technology for getting those kinds of resources. Let's just do a pilot project, make it happen, find an asteroid, see what we can get from it, bring it back to Earth. Let's see how much money they lose on it, but maybe they'll make some.
I mean, and clearly, to some degree, we will have to colonize the moon, though, in order to make this stuff happen.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
Are you all right with that?
I'm all right with that. There's nothing there.
No.
I mean, it sort of gets pummeled by asteroids or meteorites, doesn't it?
You say there's nothing there. We don't know what's going on in the backside. Well,
half of it's missing.
Half of it's missing. Okay, so our question is, could we get resources from space?
Here's what Adriana said.
We in fact already get a lot of resources from space, the most significant input being sunlight, which does travel through space from the sun. And so the question is, can we utilize resources on a larger scale than we currently do? And perhaps when we reframe the question like that, it becomes obvious that if we are to continue to grow our population and our technological capabilities, that we have no choice than to expand our resource utilization beyond planet Earth. Besides the ethical questions and the ethical impact that our resource extraction is having here on Earth, namely the pollution of our supply of air, water, and soil, the eradication of species with whom we share this habitat, is another motivation for expanding the regions in which we extract resources as far as the moon, Mars, most importantly, the asteroid belt, and perhaps even beyond.
I'm in.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't like Adriana's sunlight thing.
I did.
No, yeah, yeah, fine. Very clever. that's not what we're talking about, and you know it. But yeah, I mean, yeah, she's bang on. Like, I don't, well, I think we've both established we don't care. You can ravage the moon.
It's a terrible thing to say. It sounds terrible. But we have this sort of romantic idea about the moon, and it's like, you know.
I don't care about the moon. And certainly I don't care about asteroids. Like, no, why, like, no. There's nothing, you're not destroying anyone's habitat.
No.
There's nothing there.
It's just free
it's
money.
It's just like a floating piece of shit. But that happens to have loads of good stuff in it. So yeah, take the good stuff if you can. But it does feel like what then, if we can do it, expensive as it'll be, what then happens when you start bringing loads of this stuff back? I mean,
we just have a reset.
Yeah, I don't know if it's as easy as you say, but yeah, maybe.
It's all cryptocurrency, mate. That's why she's developing cryptocurrency, isn't it? She's worked it out.
Also, you'll know this. So you know the kind of, and this is all like hypothetical stuff, where people talk about levels of technological civilizations, and we're at like level 3. Or
oh
something.
Yeah.
What's the one where when you get like your sort of like super brain, where you effectively surround your star with, I guess, I mean, they look like massive solar panels or whatever, but you effectively, so you're harnessing like 90% of the available energy from the star that your planet is orbiting around. Have you ever seen pictures of that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I've vaguely come
across
it.
You sort of build this enormous structure and suddenly you've just got energy coming out of your ass.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
And that's how you then have enough energy to do, you know, space exploration.
It sort of takes us to the next level, doesn't
it? Yeah. I'm wondering about that. What's it called? It's got a name, that sort of, I mean, obviously we haven't done it and we've got no fucking idea how to
do it. Google it?
Yeah, go on. So big, I'm intrigued by your search term here. I'm going... technological civilization, highest level structure around star, harnessing energy. See what comes up. It's got
Kardashev scale.
Yeah, that's the scale.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
So is this a Dyson sphere?
It's a Dyson sphere. That's it. Dyson sphere.
Google's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I've not given it much there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dyson sphere. Describe it.
Oh, according to Wikipedia, a hypothetical megastructure that completely encompasses a star and captures a large percentage of its solar power output.
I've actually described that pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just like a huge solar panel surrounding the sun.
Yeah. It's worth aiming for.
Yeah, I think
so. And we
so.
Can build it out of platinum. We'll have so much.
Do what we like. Build it out of gold. Absolute money. Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound design by Katie Baxter. Special thanks to today's expert, Dr. Adriana Murray. We also really love hearing from you guys, so if you have any burning questions you want us to answer, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london, or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.